بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يقين محكم اعمال پیہم، محبت فاتح عالم. The three points that are required to conquer the world, to conquer the hearts. One is yaqeen muhkam, get our yaqeen right. Because the yaqeen is the root. We are practicing Islam and we are speaking about Islam, but the yaqeen of what we are speaking about is not in the heart. Then the talk doesn't have an effect. Look at this. People speaking about the Bible very forcefully. They train speakers to speak with a lot of emotions. For the moment people become emotionally affected, and after 5 minutes, 7 minutes, everything subsides. They all carry on. Of course they know it within their hearts, but the speaker is not so serious, and hence we don't need to be so serious. If it was a serious thing, then he would have also been cautious of himself. But it is just about impressing us with the talk. So we got impressed for the moment, we made him feel happy for the moment, and he must continue. So the first element is yaqeen muhkam. And the second, after the yaqeen, is a'mal payham. And there must be consistency in your amal. If you have got that yaqeen, then the amal must be consistent. And then the third thing that crowns all your efforts is muhabbat. That ingredient of muhabbat is so great, that's the thing that attracts, that's the thing that wins people over. Azadji had given one talk, and a lot of ulama thereafter, they quote him. Says that Shaitan was an abid, because there wasn't a place in the heavens where he hadn't prayed, he hadn't made sajda. Every spot, and he had bowed down, he had prayed to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, had made sajda. So you couldn't find an abid as great as Shaitan. But with each sajda, his intention was that the office of vicegerency is going to become available and I should become the most suitable candidate. So Shaitan can say that I didn't ask for it. His heart craved for it. Verbally, he didn't ask for it. So if he comes out technically, he says, I didn't ask for it. So because I didn't ask for it, therefore I can be eligible. But Allah Pak sees your heart like he sees your physical self. وَلَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ وَنَعْلَمُ مَا تُوَسْوِسُ بِهِ نَفْسُ. We made man, and we know exactly what goes in his heart, what goes in his mind, we know it. And this thing repeats itself, that the niyat goes off and the results all get affected. See, in Surah Noon, there is an incident of a businessman, very wealthy, farms, etc. He passed on, his children took the reins of his whole empire, but they changed their intentions. Now our father, he was living in the old, nice modern times. He should give so much charitable causes, etc., etc. He should give so much relatives and charitable causes. Now we're living in a new zamana. We have to adjust all those areas. We have to adjust it. We've got children and they have to grow up. We have to grow them up. So we can't be spending like wild. Charity starts at home. So they discussing discussing in whispers that we can't be so charitable like our father used to be. Here the intention's altered, that we can't be as charitable as we used to be. We cannot be so generous as our father used to be. And the next moment, now the intentions change, and that whole business is wiped out. The whole business, that whole thing that was flourishing, one of its kind, the zamana, everything is burnt out, everything is wiped out. See? So, if we say that we're concealing something and we didn't make any expression of it physically or verbally, and therefore we can't be affected, then something wrong in our thinking. This, that intention that they had, and they haven't yet executed that intention, and that whole business is wiped out to the ground. فَلَمَّا رَأُوهَا قَالُوا إِنَّا لَضَالُّونَ بَلْ نَحْنُ مَحْرُومُونَ. They see it, perhaps we lost our way. Then they come to the conclusion, no, we have been deprived of our whole business. The whole business is gone, wiped out. See, a lot of times we talk about the story of the king entering into the orchard and he's asking for that anar juice. Right? And what was the factor, what was the element there? The niyat changed. The niyat changed, that whole garden dried up. The juice dried up. See the niyat? And the niyat changing, and the gardening, that whole juice drying up. The importance of rectifying the intention. Last week sometimes, one new Muslim came in. From his facial expression, the way he speaks, etc., could make out he's a Tamil. Right? But the focal point of Allah Ta'ala is the heart. It's not the race, not the nationality, not the family name, nothing. It is the heart. How good is the heart? I was impressed. Although he's new, maybe 2-3 years in Islam, but if you listen to me, hear him, simple person, but it would seem that his heart was too good. See, Allah accepts, and it is the heart that he looks. وَلَكِ يَنْزُرُ إِلَىٰ قُلُوبِكُمْ. How pure the heart is, how good the heart is, and Allah accepts. So, in the course of the discussion, perhaps he knows that anybody comes into Islam, so people will question him, and what brought you to Islam? So before I could ask the question, he knew perhaps this is in my mind, and he spoke about it. So he says, no, his son had a dream that he was in heaven and he saw some Arabic inscriptions. So that brought him to Islam. So when he heard the dream from his son, so he prayed now. Staunch Christian, Tamil, but staunch Christian. So he prayed and he says, oh God, you know, they don't know Allah Ta'ala, God. If the Islam is true, then cripple me. Very daring person. If Islam is the true religion, then cripple me. And the next morning he was crippled. Alright, now he accepted Islam, perhaps he reversed the dua, and he came back on his feet. It can happen, you make a dua, and you can reverse the dua as well. It's not that you made on dua now, and it's perpetual, you can reverse it. So he reversed the dua, he's walking now normal, and he comes to see me. So then he's carrying on his story. He says, now what happened after that was that I heard about the importance of the Jummah, and person not performing Jummah, then he's not a Muslim. Now whatever he must have understood now, he's explaining as he had understood. Alright, so I'm thinking to myself, he's explaining to me that he's thinking to himself, but my job won't allow me. I'm working for a government service and they won't allow me. So I took an early retirement. Now you see that iman, that goodness of the heart, and he took an early retirement, alright? To gain the retirement now, he can perform his Jummah namaz. So they gave him his package. Now when he received his package, he's thinking to himself that if I'm going to use this up, in a couple of years I'll be dried out. What do I do? So I need to go and invest this thing. So now he says that now in this whole chakra, this whole commotion, I'm thinking now, where do I invest? So people spoke to me about some investors, private investors, etc. So he says that I knew one girl or someone, perhaps she must have studied something in accounting or in finance. So she advised him not to get into any type of private investments, because the experience that people have, you know, you go get into an investment and then it becomes too late. By the time you discover, that person has eaten everybody's money, has taken away everybody's wealth. So he was pushed away, he was moved away by what this woman had told him. Perhaps then he must have thought about the bank, but the girl may have just discouraged him from that as well, because it's giving a glossy name and a finish, but then the whole essence of Islam is being eaten. So it's giving a good cover, but the essence of Islamic finance is being eaten. So she must have discouraged him from that. Now he's thinking in his frustration now, what do I do with this wealth? I can't go and invest that thing. I can't put it into the bank. Now, what's the alternative? So he says in that frustration, I just want to put it into Absa. Nothing to do with Islam. But he said, now I'm listening to the talks, and the talks is talking against usury and interest. I'm living out of this. What do I do, Mullah? For that moment, I was caught. Because I didn't expect him to ask this type of a question. But Allah put the answer in my mind. You see, our Busughana Deen, where they emphasize on the importance of halal. Right? That if you're going to eat haram, then 40 days of your ibadah is going to get rejected. Sadaqah is not going to be accepted. You're leaving it for your children, it's a provision for Jahannam, right? And Allah Ta'ala is pure, He'll only accept that which is pure, right? And all the corruption, whether it's the madrasas or jamaat, whatever, wherever, the findings of our Buzughana Deen is largely it is because of the type of wealth that we are eating. Type of wealth that is coming into the madrasa, type of wealth that is pouring, that's bringing about the commotion and confusion. So now, on the one side, I know this thing here, and he's talking about his interest. I'm living out of interest. What do I do? Now, I like that question coming from that person. Why? See that the goodness of his heart. It was the goodness of his heart that was speaking. He was wanting to be clean with Allah Ta'ala. No type of a crooked relationship where you will just appease yourself. And appeasing yourself doesn't make the thing right. Now he knows that I'm going to appease myself, and just appeasing myself doesn't make the wrong right. You know, if someone talks 100 times about suraj, that it's as beautiful and tasty as a cake, right? It doesn't want to change the position. That filth will remain the filth, no matter who talks about it and how much they talk about it. But the filth will remain filth. It's not going to change its taste. Now, this way we're getting confused. There's so much that is being spoken about this type of wealth, that the ordinary mind begins to feel that the wrong is right. That wrong is right. Because the amount of literature, amount of talk that goes about it, so much. Allah yastawil khabith wa tayyib. Allah says it clearly, that filth and purity can't be identical, can't be the same. No, I say this repeatedly, that my Ustad, Abu Abdul Rahman Sahib, Rahmatullah alayhi, his grave with Allah Nur, a day or 2 days before he could pass away, and this was his advice. This is that the sawal of the qabr has become very easy, but don't compromise in deen. Say it as it is, I can't do it, I'm not doing it, Allah, I am regretful, I cannot do it. But not for a moment must I consider that haram to be halal. My justification, my appeasing myself, somehow to just make that haram into halal. But that's become the style of the day. It's become like the currency of the day. Haram, halal. But now this man here, he is different. He is doing the haram, and he's confessing that it's haram, but now he doesn't know what to do. He's a brand new person, right? And he's got no other alternative. He's aging up, so he doesn't know what to do. I can't even earn. I'm not of that age. But now I need to go on living. What do I do? See, he's given himself. He's mentioned his exact status. He's not covering anything. Allah likes that. See, this cleanliness of the heart, the purity of the mind, Allah Ta'ala really appreciates it. No matter who you are, what's your background, family lineage, your status in society, all that, Allah doesn't look at all that. What is the goodness of the heart? وَلَكِ يَنْزُرُ إِلَىٰ قُلُوبِكُمْ So Allah wants to see now, what is the status, what is the position of the heart? Amongst people, you are respected, you have a good reputation, you are liked and loved, right? But then, does this hold in the sight of Allah Ta'ala as well? Or sometimes people say, no, what about the hadith, أَنْتُمْ شُهَدَاءُ اللَّهِ فِي الْأَرْضِ Someone passed away, and people spoke good about him, أَسْنَوْ عَلَيْهِ خَيْرًا And Nabi said to say, وَجَبَتْ and أَنْتُمْ شُهَدَاءُ اللَّهِ فِي الْأَرْضِ Right? So this type of hadith is brought. Now everybody finds hadith to be a plaything. What the experts say, the Shari'in say, what do they say about this thing here? If it was so cheap, then before I can commit all the sin in the world, and before I can pass away, I'll tell people, hey, for a couple of good days, just keep speaking good about me, I'll see you people right. So, you know, it's a zaman of hila, how the banks are doing. Work a plan and get your agenda. I could have done that. It was so easy. Here, it was the Sahaba-i-Kiram that were speaking in praise of the person. And where Nabi Sallam says, أَنْتُمْ شُهَدَاءُ اللَّهِ It was a different class of people. It was the Sahaba-i-Kiram, whose credentials cannot be doubted. Integrity, you cannot even suspect the integrity. Right? The immaculate in their deen, the immaculate in their understanding, you can't find a replacement of the Sahaba-i-Kiram. They are speaking good about the person. So with regards to this class of people, if they say that this person is good, this type of a person, this type of a class, then that will be recognized by Allah Ta'ala, أَنْتُمْ شُهَدَاءُ اللَّهِ فِي الْأَرْضِ Otherwise, there'll be people say, no, but he was a very good person. He was a very good person, helped everybody out. But namaz ka tikana nahi. Not coming for namaz, not worried about halal haram, but it's helping people out, so Allah will look at him. Favorably. Now, some Muslim leader is saying that Desmond Tutu will go to Jannah. Because of the goodness that he is doing, kindness to people, etc. So because of that, I say this. So someone is asking me, how do you answer this? So I say, you don't answer with this class of people, you don't answer too much with Quran and Hadith. You answer them with your reasoning. He's applying reasoning, so you counter the reasoning with reasoning. Because they didn't understand hadith as yet. They will understand the word of Allah Ta'ala. They don't want to understand the word of Allah Ta'ala. So they're not going to understand. The Quran Sharif is open to who? To the one that wants to understand it in perspective. But you don't want to understand it in perspective, you want to understand it like how you want it to be, then you're not going to get the right meaning. So he's asking, alright, then how do you explain this to him? Explained, I said, Mufti Muhammad Shafi Sahib this. Given in some places, like how you can answer this type of things. He says, you see, you can make alterations, changes, etc. You can make, but within your own limits, within your own property, you can make changes. My limits, my territory, I can make changes. Bust a wall here, put up a building this side here, right? Erect something this side, erect something on that side. That's within my property, within my boundaries, I can do it. But I can't encroach into your property. For my convenience, can I encroach into yours? So when you talk about deen, that's the property of Allah Ta'ala. In the property of Allah Ta'ala, then not Ghulam Rasul, and no other Ghulam, No other gulam can make any type of changes in the property of Allah Ta'ala, no matter who you are. In the one moment, you can run around a fire in a Hindu worship, and you can still remain a Muslim. And the next moment, you are sending people to Jannah as though you took Allah Ta'ala's position. He took Allah Ta'ala's position. Allah Ta'ala, I am above you. You are dispatching this person to Jahannam. I will tell you, Allah Ta'ala, no. You send him to Jannah. So you see, he's encroaching on whose property he's encroaching. Does he have any right? Even legally, do you have a right to encroach? You don't have a right to encroach on the next person's property. It's a right of Allah Ta'ala. Hududullah. Tilka hududullah. It's a limit of Allah Ta'ala. When it's limits set up by Allah Ta'ala, nobody has got the right to encroach. You do it, and you cross the limits, and you're in trouble. وَمَنْ يَتَعَدَّ حُدُودَهُ يُدْخِلُ نَارًا خَالِدًا فِيهَا أَبَدًا. You ever cross the limits of Allah Ta'ala, you're going to Jahannam. So just remain as a servant. You're a servant, remain as a servant. You don't pretend to become God. So anyway, you're talking about this Tamil person that came in as a convert. So as he came, so he's explaining. So you see, the type of Islam we want to practice today is now must be good to everybody. So if that was Islam, then what was the reason for قُلْ يَا أَيُّوَا الْكَافِرُونَ لَا أَعْبُدُ مَا تَعْبُدُونَ? They also wanted to come into a compromise situation. The compromise they wanted from Rasulullah Pak Sarsam was not to speak out against idolatry, or just to say this much, that the idols also is good. Or the third option was just to pass your Mubarak hands over the idols. That's all, nothing else. Don't speak out against them. And we can all live as a happy community. But then the verse of the Quran is revealed, La a'budu ma ta'budu. See, in Islam, we're not going to be entertaining this type of thing. You can be a Muslim and entertain Hinduism, run around the fire, entertain every other practice. We're not going to entertain this thing. La a'budu ma ta'budu. That can work for Christianity. It can work for Hinduism. That the man is Christian, but he can still celebrate Diwali, and he's a Hindu, but he can still celebrate Christmas. That can work for them. It can't work for us. You're this way or that way. It's called Ibrahim wa li abihi wa qawmi innani bara'un mimma ta'budun. I steer clear. I break away from it. So he actually says that I break away. فَلَمَّا أَتَزَلَهُمْ وَمَا يَعْبُدُونَ مِنْ دُونَ اللَّهِ. He physically moved away from them. Not only their practices and their worship, but there was a physical desertion, a separation. See that? وَجَعَلَهَا كَلِمَةً بَاقِيَةً فِي عَقِبِهِ. And he made this as a legacy to continue, that there must be a desertion. There must be a separation. You move away. And if it was so easy just to mix up things and right? I ask you for a moment, if that surid is crying, you know, it's crying, but you can drink milk, you can drink water, but why don't you dilute some of me at least? Take some of me at least. With all its fears, are you going to sympathize with the thing? No matter how much it cries and how much of it dies, see, so you can die and dry. But you can't expect me to dilute my milk with you. You are suraj, the suraj will remain suraj, and the purity will remain pure. See, now this type of complicating, confusing thoughts, people are listening to this, every type of clip you are listening, every type of article you are reading, and you are creating a doubt within your own mind. There was some, I think it was over 30 years ago, there was a initiation of a masjid. This acquired a plot. So there were other senior people that were called, invited, and we were returning from an istima. So some of the people that were with us, they were also called. So I was a passenger and I had to come for the opening of that masjid. Now, that time they had the Thai camera. In the Thai camera, You had an Indian representative, you had a black, you had a white, you had a colored, everybody representing the government, right? So now, so they got an Indian as the head of that community. So because now you have to go through him to acquire the land, so you allow him to give a speech at the time of the opening of the masjid. So it's an opening of the masjid, but now to play it well, to acquire the land, now you have to give a position and recognition. But in that position, giving him that position, what he's going to be speaking about is what's going to be right. Are you going to be rejecting it? Are you going to be sanctioning it by your silence? What's going to happen? So I was just new. I think I just came from India, maybe a year or 2 years. Maybe it was 80, 81 somewhere. Now that Hindu, that's a representative, government representative, he's giving a talk. Now what he says that, you see, all religions are like rivers leading into the ocean. Now, I ask you, the common person, can he answer that? The impression that's created in his mind is that all are the same, going to the same ocean, we're all good people, all coming together. That's the impression that is created. So the question that will come upon that was, then what was the need for Rasulullah to make jihad, to speak out against all polytheism, shirk, kufr, etc.? Why did he speak about it? If everything was coming, everything was right, then was there a need for all this? Was there a need for Rasulullah to bust and break and throw out all the idols from around the Kaaba Sharif? There was no need for that. See now, such a great confusion he created. Now, I was new now, and I was really, really disturbed at this. Now, what can I do? See. But just to clear your mind, because I can understand that some people will be sitting here, and the same type of confusion will happen to your minds. So now, how do you clear your mind? All rivers running to one ocean. See how beautifully they portray their disbelief, their polytheistic ideas, right? Multi-religion. How beautifully they prove it. And then it can disturb and confuse, complicate the mind. But how do you answer it? So I say, first, don't listen to these things. Don't listen to this. What you're not clear about, don't listen to. Don't entertain this type of discussion. Your mind is clear, your iman is right. Then why go and disturb and disrupt your iman? But now that the question has come about, now it's important to give an answer. I said, yes, the rivers run into the ocean. But the ocean makes sure that it will wipe out and burn out all the rubbish, all the filth you're about. The acidity content in the ocean is so much that any filth, it will wipe it out, dirt. It will only keep the pure. And the filth, it will burn out. It will eat up the filth. Finished. It's gone. The acidity content in the ocean is so much. So you will never get, see if you put sewage there, right? Go and see after 2 weeks, to see if you get any smell of that thing. I think absolutely clear, gone. 2 weeks is too much. I think in 2 days, I think it's cleared up. So it will not tolerate that nonsense. The nonsense will be wiped out, will be burnt out and destroyed. It will only keep and it will only keep and protect the pure. So now, when we don't have the capacity to differentiate the right from the wrong, I ask you, is it right for us to listen to this type of talks, which will complicate the mind, confuse us, that everything is right, multi-religion is right, what that mushrik says is right also, the kafir says is right, everything is right? Is it right for us then to listen to this thing, confuse our minds? Our iman gets shaken. Right? So anyway, I come back to that question that person asked, now what do I do? So by the grace of Allah Ta'ala, the answer came to my mind. I explained to him, see, sins are of two categories. The one type of sin is such that you will suffer no pain and harm if you give it up. Like ghibat, for example, if you leave out ghibat, will you suffer any pain? Any difficulty, any financial loss, nothing. If you leave it out, no pain. If you don't view haram, whether it is a TV that is on the wall or the TV in the pocket, TV will remain TV. Whether it's on the wall or it's in your pocket, the TV will still remain the TV. In fact, I would say that the TV in the pocket is much worse than the TV on the wall. Because now you go into a home, gee, astaghfirullah, man, they got TV here. But by the same token, he's got a TV in his pocket, he doesn't talk about that. So you see, that's covering up the fault. This person is over about it, and this person is appeasing himself that, no, I just keep it for my business reasons. But you ask him, between you and Allah Ta'ala, you don't view any haram either. Do you view any haram? Deliberately or accidentally, do you view anything? So, whoever is watching, and the content is wrong, haram, the haram would remain haram. You're not going to justify it by your reasoning, and by you trying to get out of it, you're not going to, like I say, if it's suraj, and a million people tells you, no, it's butter or it's cake and all that, it will not change the status of that thing. That will remain haram, it will remain filth, no matter who tells what. So one haram is that haram, that if you give it up, then you're not going to suffer anything. No financial loss, no physical problem, nothing. Absolutely nothing. You're not going to suffer. Right. So that you leave it out immediately, with immediate effect you leave it out. And there is a haram that you fear if you're going to give it up, hamara phir kya hoga? Now I'm running my whole operation with this type of an investment, I'm going to continue. So you apprehend some type of a financial loss, some type of a physical loss. What do you do? Right? So our Buzugaladin, our elders explain that if this is the position, you are confronted with this type of a situation, if you don't have the strength and the energy to give the thing up straight away, then do these three things. One is you have the energy, you have the strength, you have that type of stamina to give it up straight away, then do it. One person is a drug addict, right? Consuming wine, drugs, etc. And he made tawbah. As he made tawbah, so he gave it up. You know, you get some people that are very strong-minded, right? Sometimes that strong-mindedness is good. Sometimes it amounts to arrogance. It's my way or highway. Many times that amounts to arrogance, right? I must have it my way. Right? And sometimes it is good. So the strong-mindedness doesn't have to be good all the time. Shaitan was, who can you find a person more strong-minded than Shaitan? Allah Pak is explaining him, right? Ma mana'aka an tasjuda lima khalaqtu biyadi. But the strong-mindedness, where he took him to? فَخْرُجْ فَإِنَّكَ رَجِيمٌ إِنَّ عَلَيْكَ لَعْنَتِي إِلَى يَوْمِ الدِّينِ. Irreversible curse. Curse that is irreversible. Now that is as a result of his strong-mindedness. Now we think that now the strong-mindedness is a very good thing. But it's not a good thing always. In some situations, it's good. You made tawbah now, you made istighfar tawbah, and you're so strong-minded that you left it out and you left it out. You left it out for the rest of time. We hear about the Tasbih of Fatimi, you know. And I say, but don't do it just walking. Do it diligently. See, sometimes we aren't fair to Rasulullah Paksa. If the Shaykh gave some zikrs, we'll sit in a posture and see that that zikr is done correctly, right? In a posture, one place, La ilaha illallah. Whatever he says, we'll do it, right? We'll do it with so much of dhyan, so much of focus. But that zikr that is being blessed by Rasulullah Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, do we do it with that level of esteem and respect? Understand? One is the askar or ashghal that was administered by a senior buzurg, etc. And one that which was passed on by Rasulullah Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So do we do it with that level of respect, focus and attention? So like we do this with respect, I don't say now compromise the respect. The respect must be maintained, but then don't compromise the respect in the things that comes from Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So now he's got this tasbih Fatimi talk about it. Many of us have come across the hadith. So someone asked him, but did you ever miss this at any time? He says, no. From the time that I heard about this, I never gave it up after that. It was only illa Siffin, Laylat al-Siffin. Once a very fierce battle had broken out, right? And I just missed it out. But then I remember I missed it out at night. You know, you read the Tasbih Fatimi. When going to sleep, right? So I just, I remember that I missed it out. I got up from my sleep, I completed it properly, and then I went to sleep. So even on that night, when we locked up in fierce battle, we are cutting off throats, at that time also I didn't leave it out. Now that is the person that is staunch on the sunnah. That type of strong-headedness is good. You're strong-willed, but that type of strong-headedness is good. You praise it, it's praiseworthy. There's some sahaba ikram that had taken bayat at the hands of Rasulullah Paksa Tarsam, right? And one of the things that they had taken bayat on is they will not ask anybody for anything, right? So now, then they were so strong heart, so strong headed in that if they are mounted and the whip has to fall and someone offers it, no way, I'll dismount and I will take that thing myself. I won't want any type of assistance coming from any person. Now that type of strong heart headedness is good. Jabir ibn Sulaym radiallahu anhu, he says that I wanted some advice from Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, right? So one of the advice that he had given is not to be abusive. لا تسب شيئا ولا تسب أحدا, right? Don't be abusive. Don't use abusive language. Derogatory language, right? Now, you can well imagine a person coming from the sticks and the type of language that they use. But now people didn't live there, so you don't know. Let's go in Jamaat, right in the sticks, and go see how they talk. The father is giving 10 swear words to the son. The son is giving the father Babki or Magmi or everything. Like it's the language. They don't feel anything about it, right? But here Rasulullah is giving him an advice that you're not going to use abusive language. So he says, Ma sababtu. Then after that, Rajulan, Walam Ra'atan, Walam Amatan, Walam Dabbatan. I didn't use that language at all. Not on a man, not on a woman, not on a slave. Not even an animal, I didn't use it. But now that type of strong-headedness is good. It's very good. Worth of praise. Not every type of strong-headedness is worthy of praise. We think, no, he's very strong-headed, he's a very great person. It's not like that. See, we just hear some words here and there. Don't be judgmental. Strong-headedness. So we begin to apply this type of phrases, not understanding what they really stand for. Judgmental, you have to be judgmental. I'm looking at this girl with the right intention or wrong intention. I say, no, I tell myself, don't be judgmental. So I'm looking with a good intention. One person is walking into the Haram Sharif and he sees a whole hundreds of Indonesian young girls, right? So he's looking at them, admiring them, and then he says, you know what? Ya Allah, kis qadar masoom chehre hai? What innocent faces they got. He can also say for himself that don't be judgmental. You know, I'm not admiring them for wrong reasons. If this judgmental story was right, then nobody would have been wrong. Then the courts didn't need to apply a person as a judge. Because he's been judgmental all his life. For all the sitting that he's sitting there, he's being judgmental. So is he doing the right job? So we just learn these phrases here, and we use it correctly, incorrectly, not realizing what we're doing. So someone was just passed some word or some phrase must come out, and then we said, no, don't be judgmental. Don't be judgmental. There is an occasion for it, but you don't be judgmental, right? There's an occasion for it, right? where we don't be judgmental, right? If it is now, for example, person readies Faras Namaz and he went home straight away, right? So now we become judgmental about the person, that why didn't he sit for Bayan and all that, and he's trying to avoid the Jamaat, etc. So now they don't become judgmental. It may be that he's got an aged mother, right? It may be that his wife may be sick, right? And therefore, after his Faras Namaz, he's going back straight home. I know there was one Molana studying here. So while he was studying, now he's got married, right? 5th year or the last year. So he complained to me that his wife feels very panicky. She's all alone in the house and she's panicking. Now you, the woman hear all this news here, there's a kidnap here, there's a hijack here, there's some robbery here. So they feel very apprehensive. So he asked me now, can I perform Isha Namaz at home? I said, well, can't you do this much, that you come for Isha Namaz at the last minute? You know, it's about, say Isha Namaz is at 8 o'clock, so you're coming just about 4 minutes before Isha Namaz. You did your Isha Namaz, and immediately after the Faras, you didn't even wait for the Dua, and you go home. Can you do that? I said, no, let me try it out. I said, no, my wife is not feeling afraid at all. Now, if we see someone doing this, then should we be judgmental about that person? Yeah, you're not supposed to be judgmental. He's doing it, he's got a valid reason. He's not missing out his Jamaat. He's got a valid reason to return back home straight away. So there we don't become judgmental. But now to use this type of phrase everywhere and anywhere, is that doing justice to the word? So anyway, I explained to him. See, our ulama kiram explained. Now you in that type of a fix, in that type of a jam, then you do three things. One is, you believe the haram to be haram. You, at no time should you try and justify the haram that you are doing. It's haram, it's haram. Say it's haram. Believe it's haram. You know, at the time of Hifz Jalsa, you may have heard the hadith, right? That the father or the parent of the Hafiz, and he'll be crowned, right? And the elegance, the splendor of that crown will be so much, right? We heard about the hadith. But that hadith has got a condition. أَحَلَّ حَلَالَهُ وَحَرَّمَ حَرَامًا. Provided an individual considers halal to be halal and haram to be haram. If he is mixing up things, then he doesn't deserve this type of an honor. See that, whether you learn the Quran, Sharif, أَحَلَّ حَلَالَهُ وَحَرَّمَ حَرَامَهُ. You believe the halal to be halal and the haram to be haram, then you deserve that reward. Like you say, من قال لا إله إلا الله دخل الجنة, right? You say لا إله إلا الله, then you will enter Jannah, right? All these things have got certain conditions. You conform to the conditions, then you deserve the reward, right? Provided, now when you say لا إله إلا الله, provided you haven't done anything that is against لا إله إلا الله. Now after saying لا إله إلا الله, you went and bowed down to one booth, or you ran around to one fire, right? Right? Now you're doing things against La ilaha illallah, and then you feel that, no, I'm still eligible for Jannat, there's something wrong. It's 5 cents short here. Not 5 cents short, really. Millions of cents short here. Right? So provided then you conform to the requirements of the kalima, then you are eligible for that reward. But you're saying La ilaha illallah, and doing everything to the contrary, and then you want that La ilaha illa as a passport to Jannat, then that's wrong. Your calculation, your reasoning is wrong. You know, you go for an interview to a company, say, alright, your salary, we confirm your salary at 20,000 rands a month, right? So it's on. So now you are coming one day to work, you're not coming the other day. Coming when you want, you're not coming when you want. And now at the end of the month, they give you 5,000 rands. But he said, you promised me 20,000 rands. You must keep up to your promise. Yes, the promises are conditional. Provided you serve all the days, then you're eligible for the salary. But you're coming as you like, and you're going as you want, and you want us to keep our side of the bargain. That's not right. See, in our business, in our employment conditions, we understand this thing here. So the same applies here in the hereafter. Provided you conform to all the requirements of La ilaha illallah, then you're eligible to the reward. It's not a one-sided traffic. It's not a one-way traffic. So that's the first thing, that you believe the haram to be haram, the halal to be halal. Don't mix up issues. Acknowledge it. Regret. Be remorseful. Scold yourself that I'm doing haram. It's my weakness. I don't have that guts. I don't have the courage to leave this thing out. So Allah Ta'ala, I'm very remorseful for what I'm doing. The second level is then, step number two is, you beg Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness as well. You consider and believe the haram to be haram. Don't you cross the limits with Allah Ta'ala. Don't cross the limits. Say it's haram. I don't have that energy. I can't manage. I'm weak. Right? So, at least your iman is secure. But now that haram, you are justifying it, make it halal. What's wrong? What's wrong if I did this? So what's wrong? Now that attitude Allah Pak doesn't like. You know this, what's wrong? That attitude Allah Pak doesn't like. And that attitude that I am wrong, 100% I'm guilty of the crime. You acknowledge, you confess. So Allah Pak already looks at you favorably. The man is doing wrong, but he is not defiant. He's not on denial. I ask you, someone comes to, you ask the person, are you on drugs? No. So he's on denial. Is there any way to treat the person? If the person is on denial, is there any way that you can treat the person? You can only treat the person if he confesses, no, I am wrong. Then you can work with him. But he's on denial from the first day that you meet him. How can you work with the person? So this person has jammed the doors upon himself. When he went on denial, he felt that he saved his reputation. But he lost himself. Shaitan also did the same thing. He went on denial. When he went on denial, I can't do it. Denial. When he went on denial, then he closed and he jammed all the doors. Everything just closed up, jammed up for him. What was the main reason? The main reason he went on denial. Anakhi, I'm better. Finish. I don't want to entertain anything else. I'm better. Close the subject. When he went on denial, he jammed all the doors for himself. Now there's no way that he can come out. Irreversible. So the second is then he asks Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness. At least, going to sleep now, at least talk to Allah Ta'ala. At that time at least, if you can't do it at any other time, that I'm wrong. And do forgive me, Allah Ta'ala. I don't have that himmat to leave the thing out. But Allah Ta'ala, you do forgive me. I ask you, that man dies in that condition. Isn't he dying in the right way? Though he's doing wrong, but he's admitting that I'm doing it wrong. I'm in my business, I'm doing wrong. Sometimes I'm swearing the person that I'm wrong for that. I don't want to justify my abusive ways, right? I don't want to justify. I'm wrong. I didn't pay the salary correctly, Allah Ta'ala, I'm wrong. I don't want to justify myself. I'm wrong, Allah Ta'ala. Even if there's an iota of doubt, Allah Ta'ala, I'm wrong. I don't want to justify myself for myself, even for a second, not for a moment. So this is the problem of the day, that you want to do a wrong, but maintain our reputation by going on denial. We think we're going on denial. We are preserving our reputation. No, but it's not that way. By Allah Ta'ala, you are destroyed, finished. And in a few days, people also see it. You have lost your reputation by Allah Ta'ala. You have lost your people as well. So, one is you confess, you acknowledge. Number two, you sincerely ask Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness. Then number three, at the third point, then you look properly for a halal alternative. Doing something wrong, you don't have the heart to give it up straight away, but with all your heart and all your mind, strive for that which is absolutely pure. Strive. So then he asked me, oh, Mu'adh, then what will happen then? I said, as long as you are striving, Allah will look at you favorably. Yeah. He's asking me now. So I said, see, you know that story, that man killed 100 people, right? Yeah, that story where that earth crumbled and all, you know? This thing shrunk up, and he said, crumpled, right? I said, yeah. You know. See, the man is talking open. You can see now the man is not hiding. He's clean about himself. And then I say again, I must repeat this thing here. Allah doesn't look at your face, family, race, color, nothing he looks at. The man got no complexion. Tamil, no complexion he's got, no features he's got. But his heart was too good. Really, from that day that I heard his story till now, I'm impressed. See, if it is in the heart, it will impress the heart. If it's clear, it's clean, good stuff, really it will affect your heart. So he says, no, I said, see that man there, he killed 100 people. So can you imagine the crime that he's committed? how many women he must have widowed, right? How many children he must have orphaned, right? How many people he must have left on the streets? How many people he must have left crying, their parents, etc., crying for him, right? But then in one stroke, Allah Ta'ala forgave him. For what? Did he reach the Qaryatu Salihin? Did he reach the village of the righteous? He didn't reach. But didn't he make an effort to go there? He tried. He acknowledged the wrong. Therefore he spoke about it. He tried to cover up, to compensate for the wrong. Therefore he strived going to the Qaryatu Salihin. But en route, he passed away. He didn't get there. Didn't Allah Ta'ala look at him favorably? Yeah, Mona, Allah Ta'ala looked at him favorably. So as long as you are trying, you are remorseful, you are asking Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness, and then number three, at the third level, you are trying your best to come to the right. And in the process, if you die, then to Allah Ta'ala will look at you favorably. Now, isn't Allah Ta'ala most gracious? Isn't He most kind? He sees our limitation. All right, are we trying to do the right, or we trying to appease our minds and guard and preserve our reputation? What are we doing? So we're talking of Shaitan and all these things come up, right? That he was an abid. And there's no two ways that he wasn't an abid. He was an abid. In fact, he was an arif as well. He knew about Allah Ta'ala. He knew about things, how things work. He knew exactly how things work. He knew the weak points of Adam alayhi salam, and how to attack him. فَدَلَّهُمَا بِغُرُورِ how to connive and how to work him down. And he said already to Allah Ta'ala, وَلَا تَجِدُ أَكْثَرَهُمْ شَاكِرِينَ. Most of them don't have gratitude. And I know the weak point. So you must know the thing, right, to be able to capsize the man. So he knew man, and he knew Allah Ta'ala as well. Because at the time that he's being thrown out, precisely at that moment, he says to Allah Ta'ala, Rabbi anzirni ila yawmi yubatun. Allah Ta'ala, spare me till the day of judgment, right? Spare me, right? So he knew about Allah, he had that type of recognition of Allah Ta'ala, that type of understanding of Allah Ta'ala, that at the time of his anger, he doesn't lose himself. Like, you know, when we are angry, for that moment we lose ourselves. Here Allah Ta'ala's sifat, his zat is still the same. Whether it is in a state of being angry or happy, but he's still accessible, he's still approachable. You can ask him and plead to him even in that state. Otherwise a normal person say, get out from here. Won't he say that when he's really upset? Here it's not the same. So he had the ma'rifat, the understanding of Allah Ta'ala as well. So he was abid, he was arif, right? And he was alim as well. Because an alim is the one that knows what is halal and what is haram. So he knew what was forbidden and what was right. He knew that. Therefore he could mislead. Had he not known what is haram and halal, could he have misled anybody? He could have misled anybody. From that time he's misleading till now. So he must have a good amount of knowledge about halal and haram. Otherwise he can't mix up and confuse people. See? So you cannot doubt the fact that he is not an abid, not an alim, he's not an arif. But then what was the missing thing? So Azhar is giving his explanation, right? The missing point in him was there was no muhabbat. See, if there was love, right? The love would have pushed him. But Allah is commanding you to just bow down. Just bow down for whatever it is. That muhabbat would have led him to humility and humble himself. He would have readily accepted that humility. He would have accepted it. But he didn't have the desired amount of muhabbat. If he had a relationship with Allah Ta'ala, it was just a formal relationship. Right? Allah, you did this, I will do this. What? A formal relationship. Not a relationship of love. A relationship of love makes the person do something else. You go beyond the call of duty. Not just duty, you go beyond. What does the beloved want? You will go beyond and beyond you will go, right? Why just to please the beloved, to get the happiness of the beloved, you will do anything and everything, just to get the pleasure.